is number 05-1336, Resonate Incorporated against Altheon Web Systems and Nortel. Mr. Chin.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court erred in finding non-infringement because it assumed a claim construction that requires a verbatim copy of six TCPIP parameters to be copied in order for the connection to be transferred under TCPIP protocol. And that's inconsistent with this court's prior decision, and it's inconsistent with preferred embodiments that are disclosed in the specification. The crux of the district court's error is that it imposed an additional narrowing construction based on the fact that the accused products use TCPIP protocol. The district court required this verbatim copy of the six parameters to perform transferring the connection for all devices that use TCPIP. And that's exactly backwards. The claim must be construed without reference to the accused device.
Yeah, but at some point, I mean, the other side has responded that the TCP discussion inserted itself understandably because the accused device used that. And I'm not sure I can see in the court's decision how that aspect of the case infected her opinion, other than to be a matter that she by necessity had to refer to because it was in the accused device, right?
The district court's opinion assumed not only TCPIP, and of course the products do use TCPIP protocol, but they assumed a traditional, unmodified implementation of TCPIP. Transferring the connection...
Well, they meaning you mean...
Oh, I apologize.
The
accused devices.
Okay.
The claim term at issue is transferring the connection, and perhaps we've gotten into a little bit of confusion because we're construing a claim construction. But the claim term at issue is transferring the connection. And as we properly, I believe, understood the claim construction when the district court first issued it in 2001, we understood it to mean that information that uniquely identifies the original connection is sent along to the assigned server so that a logical circuit is formed between client and assigned server. And that's what we see is performed when the client and assigned server's connections are spliced together in the terms of the Altheon product.
And so what makes the difference here? It's the difference between all of the information versus some of the information? Is that really what's at the heart of this?
Not quite. I think that's close, but not quite. The information must refer to the same connection. That is, as we point out in Figure 17 of the patent itself, certain of these parameters change in the embodiment of Figure 17, which is conceded by Altheon to perform Claim 6. So it's not that the numbers have to be the same, but the numbers have to refer to the same communication. Take the definition of logical circuit, for example, which I think is undisputed in this case. It's a communication over a period of time using a collection of real circuits. It has to be the same communication. The client asks for something to the load balancer. The load balancer doesn't respond itself in the invention. The load balancer figures out what's needed and forwards that connection to the assigned server. It doesn't need to use the same six parameters to forward that connection, to transfer that connection to the assigned server, but it needs to have that same connection be identified to the assigned server so that data can eventually make its way back.
Well, isn't that the $64,000 question as to whether or not it has to transfer it all or not? I mean, that's your view of it, right? But the district court
Our view is that the uniqueness of the connection must be identified to the assigned server. And we believe that's done with pport, and we believe that that's done due to the connection splicing technique. We don't believe that it must be done only by virtue of copying the six parameters.
Okay.
And that is essentially what the district court held, and that's where the error is in the implicit claim construction that was used.
Stepping back from, as you said, construing the construction and going right to the claim language, is it correct then to say that looking at the language at issue, when it goes on to say resource by storing packets received from the client when establishing the connection and by transmitting the packets, is the issue then whether all of the packets have to be submitted or something less than all of them? Is that what's relevant here in the claim language to resolving this dispute?
I believe that's close, but once again, I have a bit of a clarification. That is, packets literally themselves aren't stored and transmitted in the kind of lay sense. That is, it is all just information. There's nothing physical that can be stored. Okay. Information is collected, so to speak, and information is transmitted. And the district court in the original decision at page A777 indicated the party's agreement that packets really mean information.
Okay.
So information that identifies the original connection must be stored, and information that identifies that same connection must be forwarded to the assigned server. It is not the identical information. We know that because figure 17 changes the information. What needs to be the same is the connection that is identified, and I believe it is undisputed, as the evidence shows in the blue brief, that pport is a one-to-one correspondence that nobody disputes identifies that very same original connection. What is in dispute, I guess, is that pport is not in the exact same form of, it's a different number, undoubtedly. There are six numbers that you start out with that identifies the original connection, the six parameters. And the load balancer transmits to the assigned server pport, as well as some other information that was derived from the original connection.
So your argument, correct me if this is a misstatement of it, but if I understand it, is essentially that even if the load balancer, what the load balancer forwards is something which is has nothing in common with what the load balancer received, except that it provides information from which the server can identify the client, that nonetheless constitutes transferring the connection and transmitting the packets.
I think that would probably
is that
be
correct.
That would probably be overstating my position. My position is that it is not only that the assigned server needs to just know who to get the data back to. The original request, that is the process of the handshake,
right,
needs to be identified.
Well, okay, sure. I mean, the request, you have to know the substance of the request. Okay. But in terms of identifying, setting aside for a moment the substance of the request, which is the core element
sure.
of the communication, but other than that, all that you have to have, if I understand your argument, for purposes of establishing transfer of the connection, is some information, even if it's entirely different in format and content and everything else, some information that would allow the server to identify the client.
Essentially, that is some way that the assigned server can, whether it is assisted or not, some information that does in fact correspond to that original connection, including who the client
is.
Because
that's what I intended to say. Maybe I don't know if my parlance was.
And I think this is analogous to, for example, and we've given plenty of analogies in the briefs, but for example, a social security number identifies a person just as the person's name, address, and birth date identifies the person. And a social security number may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but it is information that identifies the connection. It is information, to turn to the accused product, that is used in the process of splicing the connection together between client and assigned server, and to essentially perform every other limitation that flows from this requirement of Claim 6. And it is not disputed that the accused products perform every other limitation.
And so how then would you circumscribe the error that you believe has been made that we need to correct?
I believe the error that has been made is that the exact literal information does not need to be copied over verbatim, and that is essentially what's required. What needs to be copied over is information that identifies the same unique connection. And we've gone through in some detail in the blue brief how pport does that. It is one-to-one, it corresponds to information in a table that's held that has everything you'd ever want to know about the original connection. Nobody disputes that pport corresponds to the original connection and every possible amount of information you would want about the original connection. On a one-to-one basis, it directly corresponds, and it's ultimately used to get information back to the client.
Do you think, do you interpret, now focusing on the language that Judge Prost specifically called out, the reference to the storing packets to be the same, to have the same content as the later reference in that limitation to the packets?
If you understand,
are we talking about the same packets?
If you understand packets to mean information, then in some sense, then yes, but with the caveat. That is, the packets are representational information. The packets aren't the numbers. In that context, a person of ordinary skill in the art would not understand the packets to mean storing six numbers and retransmitting six numbers. And we know that because figure 17 does not do that.
If I understand figure 17, it transmits additional, that's correct.
Figure 17 changes the value in the destination IP address field, which is one of the six parameters. The destination IP address field is changed from that of the load balancers to the server. That number is different.
It goes from virtual. What does it do again?
It goes from virtual to the assigned servers.
But the virtual is still also transmitted and it's part of the data field, correct?
As
Judge Bryson was correct, was he not, that you're adding something more, but you're not taking something away. Is that correct?
You are changing it as well. And the reason is because the virtual is put in the data field not to be used in the process of transferring the connection at all. The connection is transferred once the assigned server receives these packets and those packets are exchanged. The virtual IP address is in the data field, but it is not used in the step of transferring the connection by storing packets. The virtual IP address is only used in a later step, transmitting responsive data back to the client. And that step, this court has held, can happen any way you want and does not even need to be done over the transferred connection. That is, to take perhaps a slightly silly example, the information of the virtual IP address is put in the data field. It's not used during transferring the connection.
Is it transmitted or isn't it transmitted?
It is transmitted as a value, as data in the data field, but it is not used. The assigned server could then take that information, put it on an envelope, and mail it back to the client, so to speak. That is, use a different route to transmit data back. And that would be the only time that the assigned server would use that information, the virtual IP address that's stored in the data field.
Okay, and what is it in the claim language that we've been looking at that says something of more than transmitted? I mean, you keep saying it does transmit it, but it doesn't use it.
Yes, figure 17 shows that one of the parameters, the destination IP address, is changed, and the original value is put into the data packet, into the data field. So the information that is used, the parameters that are used to transfer the connection, change in figure 17. The original information is stored in the data field, but it's clearly stored for other unrelated purposes to perform a later claim limitation.
Okay, let's save your rebuttal time, and let's hear from the other side. Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I will apologize for the frog in my throat. Your Honors, the argument advanced in this court by Resonate cannot be reconciled with the plain language of the claims, with the specification, or with the district court's unchallenged claim construction. To go to Judge Prost's question, I'd like to start with the plain language of the claim itself. The claim recites transferring the connection, not a connection, but the connection. And the district court made a finding on this, that by referring to the connection in the specific, it meant not a connection in the abstract, but the same connection that was established between the client and the load balancer must be transferred to the server. But it goes on, transferring the connection by storing packets received from the client, so these are specific packets received from the client, and by transmitting the packets, again, the definite article identifying the same packets, transferring over to the assigned server. The specification is very clear on how this works. This is something called TCP state migration. Claim 12, or column 12 of the patent lays this out in great detail. The load balancer saves all of the SYN and ACK patent packet information received from the client, and then it transfers the connection by, quote, by the load balancer playing back the SYN packet.
What line? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It's column 12, and I'm reading from line 47.
Okay.
By playing back the SYN packet received from the browser and stored by the load balancer. Contrast that with the Alteon switches, Your Honor, and the undisputed evidence in the record, and this is page 1633 of the appendix, Mr. Andreessen's declaration, and quote, the Altian switches do not store the initial SYN packet sent by the client. It simply is not stored. The precise information that the specification recites will be stored by the load balancer and then transferred over to the assigned server is not saved by the Altian switches. These switches work in a fundamentally different manner. They open up a new connection. Mr. Chin referred to the spliced connection, which our technical literature refers to, and I note that these...
At the risk of oversimplification, and in my case that's a big risk, tell me if this is a fair statement of crudely what's going on here. The Altian switch gets the information, and then it creates a lookup table in which it effectively keeps all the information that it needs and sends forward only essentially a code for reconsulting the lookup table when it needs to retransmit. Is that correct?
Almost, Your Honor.
Okay. Well.
The initial connection is established between the client and the switch.
Right.
With the normal three-way handshake.
Right.
And a session table is created at the switch, which contains all the information described in this patent.
And that's the PPLOP.
No, Your Honor. That session table right. contains the client's information.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
At the switch.
I mean, I'm getting it. All right.
On the other side of the switch, it then opens a new connection to the assigned server okay. by sending out a new SYN packet with a new TCP/IP header with all new information. In that header includes PPORT. Which is a way for the server, once the ACK comes back and the connection is established, can splice these two connections together, and that is what Altian calls it, splicing the connection. And as our literature makes clear, that's not a connection between the client and the server, but rather, quote, two independent TCP connections span a web switch, one from the client to the web switch, and the second from the web switch to the second server. This function is known as TCP connection splicing, and that's at page 1681 of the appendix. That's the technical document that Resonate reproduces the figure four or five times in their briefs, but they never quote the language under it that makes clear that there always is two separate connections. And there's a fundamental technological reason for this, Your Honors. It's not a... we're not quibbling over the headers. The art of TCP/IP was well known at the time. Figures 7 and 8 in the patent itself describe the information that's contained in the packet headers. And when the patent says storing the packets and transmitting the packets, the final line of Claim 6 says retransmitting the packets. In other words, transmitting the same packets, retransmitting the packets. It did not say transmitting some of the packets or some of the information contained in the packets, but rather the packets themselves. Because, remember, this invention has two characteristics. One is the delayed binding that has to do here. The other is the bypass feature. The court held in the first appeal, that bypass is not required, but bypass is certainly claimed. It's described in the specification. And Claim 6, the method is written to a device that is capable of bypassing. Bypassing the load balancer on the outbound connection is what I'm referring to. In order to bypass so that the server talks directly to the client, the server has to have all of the information from the client connection to talk to the client. Now, the court has ruled, and we're not arguing, that it doesn't have to do it that way. It can flow back through the load balancer, but the patent claim has to be able to use bypass. Our devices cannot be bypassed. The Altian switches must stay involved at all times in the connection because there are two connections.
Lookup table that you have to go back and consult.
Correct, Your Honor.
Find the client's address.
Right? And we're not only looking up the lookup table, but the switch is actually performing checksum and other calculations to verify the accuracy of the data going back to solve for corruptions that may occur at the server. Because these are multiple server websites, the switch is effectively acting as a control center, a quality control center, for information going back to the client. So it's a very different technology than that claimed in the patent. And it's not a matter, as Resonate would have it, of simply changing one number or the other. It's a totally separate opening two connections rather than one connection.
Before getting back to the claim language as opposed to the accused device, what is your response? Figure 17, you initially, they said it's a problem because the construction doesn't include the preferred embodiment. Your initial answer, as I recall, was no, 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 everything's transferred because it's transferred. And their response to that then in the gray brief is it might be transferred in the field, but it's not used in the connection.
Well, it could be used in the connection, Your Honor, and I think Mr. Chin just conceded that in his argument. If you look at figure 17, it goes from the TCP state to the IXP state, but then when the connection at the server end is migrated up to the application layer, that is the thing that can talk to the client, it migrates back to TCP. I mean, that's described in the specification and it's shown graphically in figure 17. It's page 4519 of the appendix.
Right, I have that, okay.
And it's on the right-hand column. The data transfer is going up the arrow that's shown there.
Mm-hmm.
So IXP S goes through the network and transport layers at the server and comes out as the virtual TCP address, which is required for the bypass mode shown to go back to the client. If it didn't change it back to virtual IP address, it couldn't talk. Mr. Chin referred to mailing, addressing an envelope and mailing it. I think that's a rough analogy. If the server wants to talk directly to the client, it has to have all the information. The fact that the inventors say you can put it in the data field rather than in a header field is an acknowledgement that you have to put it somewhere so that the server gets all of the client information when the connection has been transferred over. And that's, you know, to go back to the claim language, that's in the nature of a transfer. The patent doesn't recite opening a logical circuit. It recites transferring the connection. And the argument here has sort of come away from that. Mr. Chin, during his argument, argued on P-port that it was sufficient to identify the connection. And again, this comes back to the same point. The claim never recites, nor does the claim construction order, identifying the connection. It recites transferring the connection. And the mere fact that a connection, every connection is unique in the world of the internet. Each connection literally is its own sui generis entity, but merely being able to identify it doesn't come within the recited claims. It has to be transferred. The specification, including figure 17, Your Honor, every one of the preferred embodiments, every aspect of the description of the invention, the abstract itself, the summary, the entire packet header, all of the information received from the client is eventually communicated to the assigned server. There is not a single exception, including figure 17 in this patent. That is powerful, intrinsic evidence that when it says storing the packets and transmitting the packets, it means storing all of the packets and transmitting all of the packets. There is also, Your Honor, some intrinsic evidence that the inventors knew well how to do otherwise, because the inventive method says that the information will be stored pending the receipt of a URL request from the client, and then the whole thing gets sent along to the assigned server because the URL request contains the requested content. The patent at column 8, line 45, notes that the URL contains about 50 to 150 bytes of information, excluding IP addresses, packet headers, and other network overheads. The inventors were well aware of the distinction between the information contained in the packet itself and the network headers, and where that is the only place the packet headers and network overhead are ever called out for special attention. Everywhere else in the patent, it refers only to the packets or the TCP IP packets, meaning, I believe, there's no other reading to say the packets, including the packet header information, because had the inventors wished the invention to exclude or otherwise write out the header information, they could easily have said though, so it was certainly no mystery to a person in the art that the header was that important. Mr. Chin's response will be, I presume, that the header information may be changed. The specification describes various preferred embodiments where the inventive method or apparatus is applied to a local area network or a wide area network, and there are certain preferred embodiments in which the packet header information is changed during the hops. and I'll grant them that. But what that argument leaves out is when the hops are done, when the network circle is complete, when it finally gets to the application layer of the assigned node, all of the information is there at the end. It's reserved somewhere, either in the header or in the data field, all the way along. And that's true in every instance in the specification. The point about the claim language, Your Honor, and I can go into the construction if you will, but I think it's really just an elucidation of the construction, is that this patent initially did claim transferring the connection, and it stopped. And the examiner rejected the patent as unpatentable over the prior art. And the claimants added in additional limitations of storing the packets and transmitting the packets. Now, faced with a device that concededly does not store the packets and does not transmit the packets, they want to read out the limitations that they added to gain issuance of the patent. I think this goes to the claim construction as much as it does to the estoppel argument, because it really is two independent limitations that are all but unmentioned in the blue brief and the gray brief and have been glossed over here in argument. Unless there are any further questions?
Thank you, Mr.
Your Honor.
Perry. Mr. Chin?
Perhaps I can briefly address the issue of the additional limitation of by storing and transmitting packets. First of all, that's not an issue in this case, in that the district court did not base the judgment of non-infringement on that limitation. We have asserted that that limitation is met literally because information, and that's in a footnote on page 25 of the gray brief. The district court solely based its non-infringement finding on the phrase transferring the connection. Now,
but on that premise, even if we agree with you about transferring the connection, that wouldn't end the case then.
All other limitations were conceded to be met. This was the only ground on which Altheon opposed Resonate's cross motion for summary judgment, so I think it would end the case. No other issue was raised. The record is closed. We were about to go to trial at this stage. So if transferring the connection is performed, the case should be over. And to focus on the definite article, the connection, Mr. Perry suggests that packets must literally be stored by assuming that a packet is some kind of tangible thing, that it is six numbers. That cannot be the case, because this patent tells us that TCP/IP protocol does not even need to be used. So you are not even necessarily faced with TCP parameters at all in the phrase transferring the connection. And this court recognized that in the prior appeal. What is important is that the information that identifies the connection, uniquely identify that connection. And whether you send it in the form of pport or you send it in the form of the literal same six numbers, doesn't matter. And the patent clearly indicates that you can modify all manner of information in the TCP packet sent back and forth in these two stages.
I'm a little unclear as to what exactly you mean by the term packet. Why don't you give me a definition that's consistent with your understanding of the use of that term?
Okay. The term packet is merely a collection of information that can identify something. There is reference to packets in the traditional sense, a SYN packet, for example. But if you take a look at...
This is a point at which it seems to me it gets a little slippery, and at least for me, going from one definition to the other. Are you saying that packet A is fully equivalent to packet B as long as packet A and packet B both allow you to make a unique identification of, in this case, the client? Are you saying, the different definition would be, packet A and packet B may both give you the capacity to identify, let's say, the client, but nonetheless may still be different in that they contain different information, i.e. different ways of identifying the client.
They both must contain information that identifies the same connection, that is, different representations. It can be in English.
You're saying it's A, not B, right?
I'm saying that I think I mostly agree with A in that it has to contain information that identifies the same connection, whether it's information in English or in Spanish or in regular numbers or in pport.
Right.
It needs to contain information that identifies, it's the same information in the sense that you can express a word in two different languages, and that's the same information. And in that sense, too, the packets must contain the same information. If you take a look at figure 11A, for example, it shows SYN packets, and that's packets in a slightly more restricted form, being sent to the load balancer. But then the load balancer takes that information and sends a SYN prime packet. It is a collection of information that refers to the same connection. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Parrott. Case is taken under submission.